Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to Robots and Red Tape. As always, I'm your host, Nick Schutt, here with my friend Chris Grobel. Chris, how are you today, sir?
Hey, doing well, Nick. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Dude, it's another day in paradise. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. Yeah, man. So today we're going to be talking all about AI and financial markets and regulation as well. So can just for everybody that doesn't have the opportunity to know you yet, Chris, would you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, your background, and kind of how you got here, sir?
Yeah, so, I'm an attorney. I've been in private practice in Washington, D.C. for about 4 years. Prior to that, I spent close to a decade at the SEC. I started there out of law school. I worked in the Division of Trading and Markets first, focusing on kind of like exchange regulation and market policy, and later moved to the Division of Exams, where I conducted exams of broker-dealers and this organization called FINRA, which is kind of a regulatory organization that oversees broker-dealers. So did that for a while, then moved over to join a law firm during COVID, actually, and have been doing that ever since.
Fantastic, man. That's beautiful. I appreciate you coming on. Now, is are like financial markets something that you've always been passionate about, and this is just kind of an extension of a pre-existing passion, or did you fall backwards into this?
Actually, yeah, no, it's a genuine interest. I'll give you the short version, but my dad was he was like an investor growing up, and he did trading. He was trading on like we had one of the first personal computers because he was like, oh, I don't have to call my broker. I can actually like log on to a website. And so I grew up around that. He was like all stocks all the time type stuff. So, that I just had that interest. Ended up going to law school and just thinking about, how could I marry this interest with financial markets and the law? And then got an internship at the SEC during law school and kind of parlayed that into an actual job. And then the rest is history, I guess.
Well, yeah, man, for going into a federal agency, you certainly picked the best one because I think SEC operates on its own pay scale. So,
Yeah, it's them and maybe a couple others. If you can find the SK scale, it's a good one.
Absolutely, man. So, can you give folks just an idea about like how is AI actually being used now for like within financial institutions, right? And is that a new thing?
Yeah, definitely. I guess when I give my comments, I work mostly with broker dealers and private funds and registered funds, some kind of exchanges and ATSs. But just kind of keep in mind that when we talk about financial institutions, like those are the ones that I'm familiar with and talking about. So, I think like it almost mirrors, the general public a little bit, right? Everybody. There's the Chat GPT moment, and then everybody started fooling around with it. And I think you see the same with firms. They're just like starting to use some of this stuff, starting to figure out how they can use it in a compliant way. I mean, I think broadly, like the biggest areas that you can see it right now are like in customer communications. So even something as simple as having like an AI powered chatbot, messenger on your website or something. Beyond that, using AI to help develop communications, review communications. Certainly we're seeing firms use it in like investment processes, kind of data analytics, and then just broadly in operational functions as well.
Okay, so it's doing the things around the business, not actually executing trades yet or things like that, right? It's doing analysis on data, doing analysis on filings, but you like there are from your experience, you're not seeing a bunch of like these larger firms, which are the ones I think you work with primarily, where they're having like an AI agent execute trades for them.
I mean, for the most part, no. I think the vast majority is not of trading is not happening through AI. But I'm sure those, if you want to call them tech forward or more cutting edge firms or innovative, are exploring ways that AI can be used, right? And they may be running, a small subset of trades or portfolio management through an AI, right? Whether the AI is developing strategy or the AI is kind of like taking the snapshot of the market at the time the order goes out to figure out the best place to route that order. So there's kind of like smart order routers have been around for a while, but I'm sure AI can enhance and supplement that.
Yeah, what do how do the smart order routers work? So if you
Yeah,
start,
so
how is it routed?
I'll try not to bore your listeners. The when we think of the market, right? It's I don't know, you say like, oh yeah, I send an order to a broker dealer. I log on to my website and I send an order and it gets executed. And I think most people probably think, well, maybe that order goes to the stock exchange and gets executed. And that's true. But in the United States, we have a national market system, which is made up of many, many different execution centers. Many of these are registered exchanges. So like the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ, very well known. There are many other less well-known exchanges. And then there are many kind of mini exchanges that are called alternative trading systems. It's like an exchange light, but it's a kind of permission that allows you to engage in exchange activity without being a full-blown exchange. So brokers who execute orders on behalf of their customers have imposed by FINRA what's called the duty of best execution. The rules or the law says that they have to get the best execution available for their customer. So when you think about that, if there's only one place that the order can get executed, you can see what price is available, you can go there, you can obtain that price, and then that's best execution. But if you have, a dozen or more potential execution venues all displaying prices at the same time, you need to analyze the current landscape to make sure that you're sending the order to the right place. And that's basically what a smart order router does.
It's fascinating. No, that's just fascinating. So when people are on, say, the t on TV talking about how what a stock price is, that's like largely the price, but there can be some variation in there based on like the actual exact moment, of course. But then also all these different exchanges can have like small, I would assume small different
Minuscule, yes.
minuscule price differentials. Okay.
But over thousands or millions or billions of shares, a fraction of a penny can really add up. The price is it can vary based on what you're looking at, and stocks, of course, they trade in a bid ask spread. So there's always like a price that you can buy at and a price that you can sell at, and there's a small difference between those prices, which is called the spread. And that's to say nothing of like resting orders or midpoint liquidity that are not always displayed, but they exist. So you can't even necessarily see those. But you can get a better price execution if somebody's like resting on the midpoint, for example. So yeah, there's a lot of variations, not just kind of like, oh yeah, it was $10.05 and
Right. Absolutely. And now does for the consumer, does it matter what, exchange the trade is processed through, or not really?
yeah, not really. I mean, they won't know. I mean, some brokers allow you to specify the exchange that you want to route to, but the shares that you could buy or sell on exchange X, are going to be the same ones that you like either send or receive on Exchange Y. And really the thing that the customer would see is the price. So if the broker does its job, it gets the best price available at that moment in time. And that's what the customer receives, kind of regardless of where the order gets executed.
Okay. All right. No, that's interesting. I could go more into the weeds on this, of course.
We right. There's there's a like payment for order flow and exchange rebates and fees also factor into a broker's routing decision, because they can if you provide liquidity, you can be given a rebate, whereas if you take liquidity, you can be charged a fee. And then there are exchanges that flip that model. Then there's payment for order flow, which are like high frequency trading firms where they have kind of execution agreements with firms to send their orders to this to a high frequency trading firm for execution. And so, there are firms that their entire business model is, capturing just a very little bit of many, many trades.
Yeah, but when no, but when you place that flow, when you place your trade, right? And say you're using, like a Schwab or a Fidelity, are they're not actually sending all the money directly to the exchanges, are they?
They can. I mean, there are many brokers that are exchange members. So if they're a member, they can send their flow directly to an exchange.
Right, but when I say buy $10,000 worth of stock through like a Fidelity or a Schwab, is that 10K then move? Like, does the where does that money go when I place the?
Oh, sure. So that's a, it's an it depends answer, but I mean, mostly so, all these trades are centrally cleared, which means that you have a clearinghouse that steps in between and guarantees the trade on behalf of both parties. And then, all the large brokers are like members of the clearinghouse, and brokers can also like net out obligations to a clearinghouse. So mo most likely your money stays at that broker.
No, that makes a lot of sense. So the clearinghouses have a lot of power as to how whether or not trades actually get executed.
Well, they serve more as a guarantor function. It's kind of up to the exchange to pair the trades. They need to have quote unquote established non-discretionary rules. So, if X and Y meet according to those rules, then that's the trade. The clearinghouse serves as a guarantor. And there you go.
No, man. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm curious, and I don't know if you can talk about this, about the I know what we when we spoke last, we spoke a little bit about the GME, the GameStop squeeze that happened a couple years ago. I know for a fact that Robinhood wasn't processing trades for a lot of people at that time, right? As I understand it, it's because they're clearing. From what I read, the clearinghouse essentially, or somebody were, greatly reduced their line of credit, which caused them to not be able to execute trades anymore. And I was just kind of curious how something like a situation like that fits into it. And correct me if I'm wrong.
So I mean I can't speak to that like specifically, but in a situation like that, I think I had mentioned like the large broker dealers are members of a clearinghouse, and based on the kind of outstanding obligation in terms of like, well, are you really net long a stock or net short, kind of the balance can get a little bit out of whack, let's say. And in cases like that, the clearinghouse has the ability to increase the margin requirement that the broker needs to post in order to continue facilitating that type of business. So it's a scenario is possible where, that margin requirement is increased to such a high degree that a broker may choose to instead of posting the margin, just no longer kind of increase their activity in that type of security.
No, it's interesting, and I think like situations like that are fascinating, and just others in general. You started talking, I remembered that when you were talking about it. That's like, hang on.
And I actually it's I mean it's so, yeah, it was so interesting when it happened because you had all these, it's like this kind of like crew of like internet bandits basically like, blew up the stock market for a couple of days. And it's funny, there's a regulatory reaction there, which has down the line, like there's also kind of an AI tie-in to some of that.
So.
So after that, we'll call the meme stock craze. The SEC issued they looked into it and they kind of put together a report that was like a postmortem, is like what happened, how did all this happen? And one of the things they spoke about, and there were many, so this was not the only focus, but it was a finding, is that what they called like gamification or digital engagement practices enhanced kind of like user interest to engage in certain types of transactions that were maybe like atypical for a market, at least up to that point, atypical. And so they issued that report. I don't know, a year and a half later, they actually proposed a rule that would regulate firms' use of digital engagement practices. And when I say digital engagement practices, it could be many different things, but it's broadly kind of any type of like suggestion or inducement or something that might cause a person to take an action that they wouldn't otherwise take. You could think of like, if you get a badge for like logging in every day, right? And then you're 7 days in a row, and well, you want to hit eight, or a badge for making a trade every day, right? But just kind of these things that are meant to kind of facilitate more activity, are, the SEC views those as digital engagement practices. So they published a rule proposal that would have regulated those, required firms to mitigate conflicts of interest when using or employing digital engagement practices. I think one of the problems with that proposal is that it could be read so broadly that like even like a plain old advertising, even if it was done via email, right, in a digital form, could be used as a digital, or could be viewed as a digital engagement practice. So it was, a very broad rule. It was proposed a while ago. I don't recall exactly how long ago, but kind of since we've had the change in administration, I think the prevailing view is probably that will not be adopted, or if it something like dealing with digital engagement practices is adopted, it would be likely be much narrower, and the SEC would likely repropose that. But I think the AI tie-in is that once an AI can really learn a user's preferences, like how they trade, the kind of trades they like, I mean, how easy would it be for that AI to be interacting with the user and, oh, I found this trade, like you should look at this, and all you have to do is click this button, and so on and so forth. So you could certainly see AI playing a role in that.
Yeah, but I don't think that so having an AI agent look for trades within certain parameters, I think that it's a great use case for AI, right? Especially in this market, I do think that maybe if you had something like that where you could opt into it with your broker, might be really cool. I think for me personally, from a digital engagement perspective, when I start thinking about digital engagement and thinking about organizations at large, you start thinking about enticing people to use the system, right? And I have problems with that, especially as it relates to phones and phone engagement. I think that overall, as a society, we're overly reliant and dependent on phones and addicted to them. And I think that pushing those things out to you, without consent or without being able to opt out is, or without having to opt in, because those are two very separate things, are are problematic and can create problems. And when you look at other industries, right, and I'm not comparing making a direct comparison to the two, but you look at other industries like like the legal gambling industry and having them push it bets out to you, right? And like things like and but also I would personally be more interested in things like that from a like a brokerage where they had a fiduciary responsibility as opposed to a responsibility to make money for the organization, right? Because if you're pushing, if I as a business am pushing out like, hey, make this bet, I'm not going to push out one that people are going to win. like I'm in the business of you losing bets, not me paying you, right?
Arguably, and I'm not here. I don't know. I don't do a lot of sports betting. So, but I always thought that the book makes money. Like the ideal book for them to have is one where, the team A is equal to team B bets, and so they just cancel out and they take whatever fee that they take, and they don't have to worry about their risk if it goes the wrong way. But again, that's not my world.
Well,
But I agree with your point though.
right. What I can tell you is that the research that I've read, and this is completely off topic, but the research I've read is that the bets that statistically pay out the least are parlays, which is why you see them being pushed so much by organizations, right? Is be like FanDuel wants you to bet parlays because you're not gonna hit them 78% of the time or something. And they know exactly what percentage, right? Because of course they do. So that's what they're going to push out, right? As opposed to in this case, like, hey, I, like to buy mid-market companies, that in this sector between, and then like, but I mean, and then, having like an AI agent go out and like do some of that research for you. 'Cause I think that as like a trader, somebody that enjoys like the research is the heavy lift, right?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there'd be a lot of regulatory implications for like an AI that might present a trade to a user. But I think you've hit on like some good kind of start, like opting in, right? Or if the user could instruct the broker as to the types of trades that they'd like to see. But still, there'd still be a lot of different obligations there, regulation, best interest, and others. But yeah, we're probably not that far away from seeing things like that,
Yeah, man. No, absolutely. And so what do you think that like, compliance within some of these firms would be a good place for AI to play a role?
Oh yeah, like operational functions. I mean that's a place that I think you're already seeing firms use AI, and it's probably particularly well suited, at least certain compliance functions, for the use of AI. Just anecdotally, I was at a securities industry conference a few months ago, and they've got the booths, right, and the whole. And I mean, so compliance consultants, as far as the eye can see, all touting their AI and how their AI helps with, name it, any different function. So that's definitely like working its way in. But in compliance, like several areas, I think surveillance and monitoring. I mean that's easy, right? It's taking large amounts of data and like finding, patterns and anomalies and things like that. Similar, like any task that involves synthesizing a lot of data, so like customer identification or monitoring trades for suspicious activity, like that's probably one that AI is very good at. Bringing that into like cybersecurity, I think a lot, the cybersecurity companies are already advertising about how they have AI that helps. And cybersecurity is just as big in financial industry as it is in other places. Then things like record keeping, communication reviews, the broker dealers that when they have registered representatives that might engage in kind of like selling activity. So like emailing a client and saying like, oh, hey, I thought this stock might be good for you. Like, is that something you want to talk further about? All the emails get compiled and they get reviewed, and there's kind of like these like hot word searches that occur. But they're really just kind of like keyword searches. Then you get 100 hits back, and a compliance consultant has to read through all those 100 emails. And AI eventually could probably, like, in almost real time, detect an email that was problematic for whatever reason.
No, of course it can. Yeah. I mean, it can probably detect it while you're writing it if it gives you permission to, if you give it
You're
permission.
right. Yeah, don't say this.
Yeah, literally. I mean, like, I think that like when you start looking at like regulations and compliance regulations, that's a very, very labor intensive part of this, right? Of the trading. Like, I would assume that there's a huge amount of just red tape associated with these organizations and the amount of stuff they need to do to even be compliant with SEC law, right? Or SEC rule.
Oh, absolutely. And there are only ever more rules. And especially like the past 4 years, it was like the most active SEC and rulemaking at like ever, basically. And so yeah, you've got hundreds and hundreds of rules to comply with, and more every day. And the joke that I make is like, well, when are brokers supposed to find time to actually engage in transactions and securities? Because so much of their time is spent complying.
It's a lot of places though, especially as it relates to things like anything where government is like has a hand in it, whether it's medical or like financial, anything that they're touching, there's just a huge amount of paperwork associated with it. And I mean, that's great for you specifically, Chris. That's what
It keeps me employed, I guess. So
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so you really think AI in like research and like operational things, compliance, huge, huge parts of where it can be useful immediately, right? Or is being useful now.
Absolutely. And I think it's like certainly compliance, it's already being useful. Same thing with kind of like the portfolio review or optimization type stuff, where if you have a set of predetermined metrics, like I want a balanced portfolio with 20% allocated to European stocks and 15% to bond, whatever. But you could use an AI to basically maintain that balance. But that is with kind of predetermining what those parameters are, as opposed to the AI like designing a portfolio. So yeah, it's in use there. It'll continue to grow, I think, in compliance. I mean, I think eventually it's possible that broker dealers, for a number of different rules, they have kind of like annual compliance reports or periodic financial reports. That if you have an AI tool that is integrated enough into your system, that the AI tool just kind of produces the first draft of that report. And it's like, hey, here's your 3120 report. It's due to be filed in 2 weeks. Let me know if I should make any changes, kind of thing. And I think that that is a realistic possibility, like however number of years down the line.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you, and I think that the challenge won't be getting a tool there from a like a document generation perspective. The challenge will be a market adoption, right? Because I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, I'd assume that a lot of these folks out here that are in like making these decisions are not necessarily, like, as far as like what we're going to do as a firm, are not the most tech forward people by and large.
I think that's fair. I mean, you have a whole universe of firms, right? Like some are like the starched collar, tie every day, and those firms probably aren't leaning too hard into AI. And then you have other firms that maybe kind of their brand is being like the innovative firm. So they're leaning in really hard to like how like where can we optimize? Like, let's go. And then you got a lot that are somewhere in between. So they're, I think it's all over the map, but I think, as with many things, like you'll have kind of the early adopters, They might find some things that work really well. There might be some very public stumbles that they take and that everybody else learns from. And then, and then over time, there's gradually more and more adoption.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Do you ever think that SEC will like push AI onto firms as far as like compliance and reporting? Like you have to use these tools.
That's a really good question. I think the easy answer there is no, and I think that's the answer that I'm going to stick with. The SEC, it in is going back to kind of, typewriters giving way to the internet. They have always styled themselves as technology neutral, and that they would propose rules that are at least hypothetically technology neutral. And they repeated that a lot in recently with like some of the crypto rules that they did. So I think they at least like to think that they're agnostic when it comes to technology, and that's maybe more true of some administrations than others, and that's fine. But I don't think that they would necessarily require use of it, because I mean, you can still send in paper filings to the SEC if you want to, and some filings can only be paper. You can't even send electronic filings for certain things, but that's kind of a digression. I could certainly see where, the SEC is comfortable with firms using AI for certain functions. But to me, that would be short of requiring it.
Yeah, and suggest it, hey, if you guys want to save yourself a bunch of time, you can, but you can send us paper if you want to.
I looked at some paper files when I was at the SEC, and I thought, why are we still getting files of paper? But,
Absolutely.
bureaucracy moves slow.
Yeah, and I think the slow moving bureaucracy is a feature of it, not a bug, right? I
Yeah.
think it's like it should take time to make systemic changes, or they don't they, there is no competition really, especially for not for the like US government, well, especially here, like the competition is in like the DOD and intelligence community side, but over here, like there's not like a lot of competition. I think that not upsetting the boat and making sure and like protecting a stable business environment is more important than like innovating and being on the cutting edge. I think that's what like industry is for, right?
Totally agree.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. No, it's really cool. And so, you talk about industry a lot, but on that, like from the SEC side, right? Where do you think the SEC itself should be looking at AI implementations? What should they really, if you were, say the head of the SEC, Chris, like what would your priorities be?
Oh wow. I didn't have a chance to prepare for that one in advance. No, it's funny. They're actually maybe doing a little bit more than some people think. But in terms of the SEC's own use of AI, I think it was late last year, they designated a chief artificial intelligence officer at the SEC. And they, they kind of the role of that position is to promote innovation and manage risk and, implement effective AI governance, like within the agency itself. They also published like an AI compliance plan, establishing a working group to like update internal AI policies. So they, they're not, and they catch a lot of flack. There's a lot of sophistication that occurs in that building, in all seriousness. And, so this AI working group and their chief artificial intelligence officer is one. I think areas and no, with the caveat that I only kind of have an exposure to, a couple divisions of a much larger agency, especially like in Well, both exams and trading at markets, I mean, they look at a lot of information. They look at a lot of filings. They look at a lot of data in exams. I think, so there's a lot of document review, which is not necessarily a glamorous job, but it's an important one if you're going to do the job correctly. So I could, if I had an AI tool that was like a heat map that kind of like, you upload whatever basket of documents that you get from a registrant, and it's like, check over here, look at these ones. I think that would really, make their process much more efficient rather than, looking through the proverbial haystack every time. There are certain things, and as the large language models improve, there are certain areas where, like a securities exchange. Every securities exchange has their own rule books. And that rule book was initially approved by the SEC when they approved that exchange to become a registered exchange. And anytime they the exchange wants to change their rule book outside of a certain few categories, which are like immediately effective, that are kind of technical or non-substantive, the SEC has to propose, has to approve material changes to that rule book. And in the filing that the exchange makes to request approval of the change, they have to justify the change against like specified enumerated statutory standards. And I feel like you could teach an AI like large language model to review their justification, because like the change has to be, it has to maintain or further protect investors, and it has to, maintain fair and orderly and efficient markets. And so there are all these kind of like factors, right? I think you could train an AI to review that and be like, have they hit them all? What were their justifications? Like, did you have questions? Like, where could they expand more on that? And just kind of like automate some of those reviews. So, I think like anywhere, there's probably a lot of potential use cases for it.
Absolutely. Document organization and classification and review is a huge, huge upside. Like I, just had a like worked a project over at EPA. We rolled out a new records management system for them agency wide. So we architected it, built it, wrote a lot of custom code to automate document intake, right? And as part of that process, we, we used, natural language processing to review the documents in real time and then automatically classify and sort them and put them in the right place. And if there are if there's a question that gets flagged up to somebody, and so like things like that, absolutely. And then the like looking at your documents and understanding what you have and where you need to focus, absolutely being done. I actually just, I had a gentleman on the podcast earlier this year who won a one two three lawsuits against a private equity firm by using AI for to find the smoking guns and find the needles in all of the document disclosure that they got, because you ask for documents and I mean the strategy, you just drown them in paperwork, right? Yeah, you can't that's not as effective as a tool as it used to be.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, and I thought of one other area as you were speaking, and there's a very large project that the SEC has undertaken called CAT. It's the Consolidated Audit Trail. It's basically like, I don't know, maybe the world's largest collection of data. It's kind of like every data metric from every exchange. Consolidated, right? So at any point you can kind of recreate what the market looked like at any given second. And is this massive undertaking, but think of all the data that's there.
It's
And
incredible.
I mean, what could AI do with that?
Oh.
Probably beyond scope of my knowledge, but I'm sure quite a bit.
Mine too, but I think recognition, like pattern recognition, is huge, right? And I, when you're looking for fraudulent activity, patterns, pattern recognition is a big part of it, right?
Yeah, like for, there's certain trading activities that are, kind of fraudulent, like layering or spoofing, which are, kind of by design make the price of a security look different than what it would otherwise be absent those strategies, or insider trading, right? I mean, somebody buys a ton of options right before a piece of news hits, and I think picking those things out should be like easy at this point.
Should be. There's questions I have about some stuff that's happened over the last month and a half, which I'm not going to ask you about, but so I'm with you. It should be really easy, but I also think there has to be a will to like enforce it, which is a different conversation altogether, right? No, but I think you're absolutely right. Like looking at it, like, having an understanding of what was going on and then combining it with other data sources so that you can see what were people talking about at that time. What did you know? Who were you talking to? Right? All of that, absolutely. As long as you have the access to the data, that's awesome. So, yeah, really, really cool. Yeah, absolutely. And then, do you, how does the SEC like detect market manipulation and insider trading now?
I wouldn't want to reveal the special sauce or anything. But no, they actually have like very sophisticated software that they so they would get kind of like raw data from whoever they're investigating or asking, and so you get this raw data file, and they have developed over time like really good software to kind of look through that. But they're, the no matter how good the software is, you only have like the data that that one firm provided. Where if you have like the consolidated audit trail, it's like the entire market at that time. So I could see how there'd be a difference, like regardless of how good your software is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then, yeah, there's a big gap between like retail and like investor and like large organizations in there and their ability to trade, whether it's high frequency trading, other things. Do you think that AI could be utilized to help level that playing field between, like the consumer market and, professionals?
Maybe. I think that, I think probably, but I think maybe not by when I first thought about that question, I was like, well, what if I had a really good AI? Like, I wouldn't even know what questions to ask it or what to instruct it to do to help, make me trade like, one of the best top trading firms out there or something like that. So what I could see happening potentially is, like a startup or a third party company, develop like who has sophistication in kind of like the highest echelons of trading, develop some type of AI overlay that then as a retail trader could, license from them on a monthly basis, something like that. So I could see that potentially
Yeah, man.
being in play.
No, absolutely. It's a fascinating time. I think like the financial markets in and themselves are really interesting use case for things like the, for technologies like this.
One the SEC is also they've got their chief AI officer. They seem to have pumped the brakes on that rule that would have been a kind of an overreach and pouring a lot of cold water on AI. But they're also very active in examining and enforcing for use or misuse of AI. It's kind of at the forefront in terms of that, but they've several excuse me settled several enforcement actions from with firms for like AI washing. So maybe a firm says that we use AI to enhance our trading strategy, and so you should give us money, or a fund says that like we invest in AI companies or whatever, using AI almost as like kind of the marketing gloss to get more investors to invest in their fund. So SEC has brought several actions there
Good.
against firms for false and misleading use of this type of information. Then the Division of Exams is already kind of examining for firms' use of AI, not necessarily to, you know, fine them or refer them to enforcement, but to figure out how they're using AI and to make sure that they're using it the right way.
Yeah. No, and I think that that's a big thing. I think that making sure we're using it the right way and using these tools the right way, is what like the SEC's job truthfully is, right? Is making sure that there's as much of a level playing field between, institutional investors and consumer investors as well, as they can be, because they just like, I don't care who you are as an individual investor, you don't have the ability to cut deals like a Warren Buffett did, right? Like you just it's, or does. It's just not a thing, right? You
Right.
don't have the ability to go to Bank of America and negotiate a lower, like a sweetheart deal to get like special stocks. That's not.
here's my $100.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's just not a thing, right? But I think that this tool has a like I think AI has a the ability to be, to create a lot of chaos, both in like in the markets, if it's unleashed in the markets, but also not just in the markets, but also in like with companies like blowing up in the markets, right? I think we're similar place to where we were in the 90s with a whole lot of companies coming out, right? It was internet companies in the 90s, and now it's AI companies that just like are it's just all smoke and mirrors, you know what I mean? And it's I think that there's going to be a lot of that piece is in it as well, where there's people taking companies public that may or may not, like a that may or may not have real technology, like a Theranos or somebody, right?
Pets.com.
Literally, yeah, exactly. But at the same time, there's a lot of value there, and there's a lot of really interesting places for these things to go. And I think there's a huge place for it in the market, just in general. But to your point about AI being used as a marketing tool, dude, I was in a Best Buy last week, and I literally saw I was looking for a new like screen protector for my phone because the last one got a little crack in it, and there's one that was there that was like more money that literally said on the box, optimized for AI. And I'm like, dude, I don't know what that means. Like, how do you optimize a screen protector?
What could it do differently than the other screen protector?
Well, just take more of your money because it was more
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
expensive.
AI enhanced.
Yes. It's also like that's what everybody wants to hear right now. That's what people want to buy. That's the in thing. Everybody's like, ooh, it's sexy, it's new, let's do. But it's also like we're so early, right? I when you think about the difficulty of building a website in 1995 versus today, right? If you wanted to customize your MySpace profile, you needed to know how to code, right? If you wanted to build a website, then you needed to know how to code. Now you can just go on Squarespace or GoDaddy or any of these other ones, and they will use AI to put a whole placeholder website up for you, saying coming soon, like that, right? And so
It's
when
like
you
if you can use Microsoft Word, you can pretty much create your own website.
Correct, correct. And now I think where we are now with AI is a lot of the really, really, really exciting stuff that's happening are the behind the scenes utilities that are needed to make some of these larger deployments effective. Right. So, like I think somebody just got a big, like somebody just got a Y Combinator award for like a PDF intake that can intake and read and like process massive amounts of PDFs at any given time, right? But that's like it's like or that's basic, right? That's something that you but it's also a building block. And so you can't do higher level things without having the fundamental underlying tech. And that's kind of where we are.
No, that makes total sense.
Yeah, man. No, absolutely. It's really it's interesting though. As Anything that I missed though, Chris? Anything else you'd like to add? Any additional points you'd like to make as it relates to SEC, AI, and the markets?
The I think maybe one thing that is worth mentioning is like, okay, if you are a firm that is like using or thinking about using AI, like what are some of the things you should be thinking about so that, if FINRA or the SEC come and ask you, like, oh, well, tell us about this AI that you use, like you're prepared, right? So like how do you use it properly? There's probably a handful of things that they could think about. Certainly like the firm's own like data governance would be key, right? So like knowing what your data is and like knowing what data you're giving to the AI, and then kind of hand in hand with that would be privacy, right? Because the AI tool that you're using is potentially licensed from a third party, and you may be giving it, either sophisticated proprietary information or customer information that is, personally identifiable information, which is kind of this s regulated subset of information. And so, have you diligenced this vendor, right? Have you taken through your vendor management process? Have you put provisions in the contract to ensure that, the data remains protected?
And you know where it is also,
Yeah,
like.
and then where it is. It's not being like copied or duplicated or sent somewhere else.
Yeah, because when you save something to the cloud, it can like Google or Amazon can just like move it to another data set or someplace else because to make it more efficient, right? And
Yeah, totally.
maybe you can't take that data out of the country. But I
Yep.
inter go ahead. I interrupted you though, man. You were on a roll, Chris. My
Oh, sorry. No, that's all right.
bad.
And then, I think like all the broker dealers out there will know what I'm talking about, but every BD has written supervisory procedures, which kind of like govern how they comply with all the different things they need to comply with. So it's not only about like doing it, like managing the data, managing the privacy, diligencing the vendor. It's making sure that the written procedures spell out each and every one of those things that you need to do, and then that you actually do them, and probably help you to document that you did them. So that if the SEC or FINRA do come around, you can be like, well, yeah, we did this, right? And then just periodic reviews, right? I think one thing that will be a continuous theme in AI, at least when we're talking about regulated stuff, is like always making sure that there's a human layer. And I know that kind of defeats the point, but you need eyes on it from time to time to make sure that things are going, the way that everybody thinks they should be going.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And having human in the loop is super important, especially as it relates to this in general. And it's interesting the difference between like defense deployments where you have to have and their priorities versus here and where, it's human in the loop is super important and has to be had, right? And so I completely agree with you. If anybody wants to talk to you more about this, should they reach out? How can they do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Chris Grobel, I'm with the law firm Goodwin Procter. You could see me on my firm page. You could hit me up on LinkedIn. I don't think I have a Facebook anymore. But yeah, see Grobel at goodwinlaw.com, and would love to, carry on the conversation.
Awesome, man. Dude, Chris, I really appreciate you coming on. This is a lot of fun. I learned a lot and I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're very busy.
No, it was great to be here. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Absolutely awesome. Everybody, thanks for listening to Robots and Red Tape. I hope you're having a great day.